students there, one of the questions in the survey was, how many of you think you're, or do you think you're more attractive than your classmates? Okay. 80% of the people said yes, they think they're more attractive than their classmates. I think it's interesting. I don't think they're unique in that. And some of y'all are doing the math. No, that does not work. You can't do. It can't be 80%. You know, I've heard said we judge other people by their results, and we judge ourselves by our intentions. You can let that sink in your brain a little bit. I don't know who originally said it, but I'm just repeating it. We judge other people by what actually happens, but we give ourselves a benefit of a doubt that we intended something else. So we put a lot of credit to ourselves for that. What if we started giving other people credit for their intentions? Assumed good intent. Assume good intent. Don't assume that there's destruction and conniving in other people's heart. I think that could go a long way, but I will say that we do often see ourselves in a brighter light than maybe we should, and we need to be careful about that. We definitely, all of us carry certain blind spots around, and we're always looking to justify our position and back up our position, but it's a very real reality, if that's the way you can say that. It's a very real thing that we are wrong a lot more often than we realize. I remember when I was in my teens, I was convinced of certain things. I just knew it to be fact in the world, and I would have spent as much energy and time to argue with you as I could. Now, a few years later, a few decades later, no longer in my teens, I can look back on some of those positions and go, I was just flat wrong. And I wonder if I had the wisdom of an older man or a smarter man or the wisdom of God, how I would look on my current opinions today and say, well, they're just flat wrong. But I'm too blind to be able to see it, just like we often are. Okay, let's start with our lesson tonight in the book of Genesis. Genesis 1, chapter 1. We're going to go to the very beginning. It says, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. This was on purpose. This was by design. It was not by accident. He had an intentional act to create the heaven and the earth. Now, for the next 25 verses, he goes on and he creates the elements. He creates the creatures, the beast of the earth and of the water. And he states over and over through those creations that it was good. It was good. It was good. He was satisfied with the creations that he had made. In verse 26 of Genesis 1, and God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness. Notice there's a plural there. What's the plural in that verse? The Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. They were all there during this creation. God said, God the three-person Godhead said, let us make man in our own image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over the cattle and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. Verse 27, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female created he them. And God blessed them, and God said unto them, this is the key verse for the lesson tonight. God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. And God said, behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed, which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed, to you it shall be for meat. And to every beast of the earth and every fowl of the air and to everything that creepeth upon the earth wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat, and it was so. So he said, I've supplied all these things for you, that you would have dominion over it, that you would have nutrition from it, that you would be able to prosper from it. But let's go back real quick to verse 28, where he says, be fruitful and multiply, replenish the earth and subdue it. God created Adam and Eve, and he had intention for multiplication to happen because he created man and woman. And he said, I want you to multiply, I want you to prosper, and I want you to populate the earth. In verse 31, it says, and God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day. So God began this thing as very good. A start for mankind. Dominion over the earth. Dominion for mankind and womankind. He put us in charge. We were in charge, built to serve God's purpose. Made to prosper in God's will. Go be fruitful and multiply, is what he said. But we all know the story. We allowed sin to tarnish the beginning. Adam and Eve partook of that which was forbidden. They chose their way instead of God's way. How far do you think we would have made it if Adam and Eve hadn't have committed that first sin? We wouldn't have made it very far. I know we wouldn't have made it to 1972 when I was born. So eventually somebody was going to mess this up. And it just happened to be the first humans that walked the earth. And, you know, I think today, even today in this fallen world, we're faced with the same decision that Adam and Eve were faced with. Will we accomplish our purpose, or will we accomplish God's purpose? Will we serve a life that serves our appetites, or will we sacrifice and be obedient and serve a life that would prosper the kingdom of God? So, we'll prosper in God's path, or we'll strike out to be great in our own wisdom, our own strength, our own energy, to create glory for ourselves. Let's go over into the book of Genesis. There's a story over there that I think illustrates this a great deal. Well, in Genesis 9:1, we'll start there. See, man had messed it all up. The fall of Adam and Eve just continued with Cain and Abel and their descendants, and things had gotten in a big mess. So God saw a need to destroy the earth with water. We all know the story of Noah. And he saw a need to destroy the inhabitation of the earth. And those that wouldn't accept the ark, the escape, they would be consumed by the flood. So fast forward through that flood for the sake of time here. And Genesis 9:1, it says, after the flood, God tells Noah and his sons to be fruitful, multiply, and replenish the earth. That sounds familiar, doesn't it? I started this thing, Adam and Eve, for you to go multiply, replenish the earth, and prosper. It got all messed up. I'm cleaning it all off. And those who are left, those who are to begin the new situation, I want you to go be fruitful, multiply, and replenish the earth. Okay, let's skip on over to Genesis 10. God starts speaking to the descendants of Noah there, those that were available to follow out his command. By the way, those that were available at this time were among those that were saved in the ark. They were in the group because they had benefited from God's grace by providing that ark. We're in this group because we've benefited from God's grace for providing this ministry and providing this way for us. God may ask something of us as a group, and we should be honored to take part in that. And a group, like as he would ask us. I'll say it's easy for us to focus on the burdens of life and the pressures and the demands of life. I say, no doubt, most of you, a lot of you, especially those of you who are in the what they call the messy middle, like that's in your early to mid 20s up into your early to mid 40s, probably when you got kids pulling on you and you got their lives that you're trying to align yourself to, and you got ball games and you got ballet and you got all these things and it's pulling on you, and you're trying to make ends meet financially and you're trying to keep your energy up. Sometimes it feels like it can be overwhelming. And if you survive that, you get to move to the next stage of life, which is older, but not nearly the amount of energy that you had. Not as much burden, but not nearly the amount of energy. So no doubt we feel pulled. No doubt you may feel like there's nothing else you can give sometimes. But don't forget you're needed, you're valued, and you're needed because you do have something to give. Noah's descendants had something to give here. They were to, again, be fruitful and multiply. Let's move on ahead to the book of Genesis, chapter number 11. We get into an illustration here that I'd like to kind of draw out. And the whole world and the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. You know, it's pretty rare when everyone is speaking the same language. It's very difficult for everybody to be on the same page. Even me tonight, I'm speaking English, and I think we all speak English to varying degrees. I could ask after this service what you heard and what you heard and what you heard and what Randy said about X, Y, or Z, and we get at least, you know, as many different versions probably as people we have in here, because we hear things differently. It's very difficult to have us all on the same page. In verse 2 it says, "And it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there." Now, these are Noah's descendants who were given the direction by God to go multiply, spread across the earth, and prosper. In verse 3, they said, "And they said one to another, they started figuring it out. They'd already gotten their directions from God, but they said, hey, let's talk about what y'all think we should do. They said one to another, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone, and slime had they for mortar." Okay, we got some resources here. All right. Maybe we need to do something with it. If you're instructed to go multiply into the earth, why are you making bricks? Aren't they heavy? Bricks were still heavy back in that day, right? You're going to travel with a bunch of bricks? No, they had no intention of doing what God said to do. He said in verse 4, "And they said, go to let us build us a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven, and let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad the face of the whole earth." So regardless of what God's direction for them was, they said, wait a minute, I got a better idea. Let's make us a huge tower that reaches up to heaven, and let us make us a name. Let's make a mark on this world. Let's go do something great under our own power. Let's go make brick so that we can build something huge. Oh, God said go out. God said go multiply. God said go be fruitful. That doesn't make sense. We got to do something great. We have to live a legacy in this world. So they said, you know, if you read these verses, it was they said in verse 4, let us build us a city. They have opinions today. There's always the days in our lives that have opinions on what we should do and how we should spend our time and how we should align ourselves. And they are still saying what you should do with your life. Be careful about listening to what they say. We have to be able to listen to what God says. There are some things that I stay confused about. I don't know maybe what I'm supposed to say in a certain moment, or I don't know if what I said was correct, or sometimes I have anxiety of, well, should I have gone this direction or that direction? But there are a lot of things that I have no confusion about. There are some things that are very true in this Bible that I know exactly what to do because God said exactly what to do. And I can live by those things, or I can live against those things. I have that choice, and I can suffer the consequences, or I can reap the benefits of those choices, just like all of us have that. So Noah's descendants found a new purpose in their good fortune. We are blessed. Let us make us a name. We have opportunity. Let us make us a name. We have resources. Let us make us a name. We have talent. Let us make us a name. We all have those things too, to varying degrees. A lot of us are trying to make us a name. We're all guilty of that to some extent. In this situation of grace, they were the saved. They were Noah's descendants. They didn't mind God and they didn't mind what God wanted. They said, let us make us a name. This is a slippery slope as a Christian. We focus our energy on ourselves, on our own name and our own position. That's a very dangerous place to be. God's never honored that through the Bible. He's not going to start honoring it now in our lives. He doesn't honor selfishness on us. You know what God honors? The Bible's very clear about it. He honors obedience. It's that simple. Because we got nothing to bring. We got no talent that He doesn't have access to in other people. We got no resources that He doesn't have access to. The thing that we have to bargain with God with, the thing that we can offer, that he won't make us offer, is obedience. We have to offer it freely. Now, He can make us wish we weren't we had been obedient, but He can and won't make us obedient. We can suffer the consequences of not being obedient and then become obedient, but He's not going to make us because He gave us free will. So God gave favor to many people across the Bible. I think about some of the stories. He gave favor to Moses and made Moses a very mighty man. And they came to a place where Moses was told by God to speak to the rock and water would flow from the rock. So Moses took a stick, took a rod and struck the rock. It was a big difference. Huge difference in God's eyes. Cost Moses from ever seeing the promised land. Even a man who has and a woman who has God's favor, God can't honor disobedience. You look in your back in your Old Testament and you look at the life of Saul, King Saul. This was the king before King David. If you read the pages of when he first became king, he was actually just out looking for his dad's donkeys that had been lost. He was searching from city to city or area to area looking for his dad's donkeys. And he came across a man named Samuel. And the Bible said that Saul was head and shoulders above everyone else, meaning I guess he was taller than everyone else. He stood out as a strikingly handsome person. He was goodly to look upon. He just was special. He was special in that day, and Samuel brought him into his house and set him at the head of the table and brought out food that he had put back for the guest that was coming, that God told him was coming. He gave him the best cut of meat, and Saul said, I'm of the least of the tribes. My people are the least. Why am I getting this special treatment? Well, there was something that God had for him to do, and Samuel anointed him king. Well, fast forward later into Saul's story, he's waiting for Samuel to do a sacrifice for the people. Saul had God's favor. He got impatient about Samuel not showing up when he wanted him to or when he expected him to, and he took the man of God's job upon himself. And he did the sacrifice himself. It was that moment he lost God's favor. And God said, you no longer have my favor, you no longer have my blessing. Saul's life started to become torment, and another king was chosen, who was David. And you follow David, he started out as that ruddy little lad. He's the one that killed Goliath. They were singing songs. Saul has his thousands. He's killed thousands, but David's killed his tens of thousands. Saul was in a place of no longer prospering because he had disobeyed God. And David was anointed king, and David was honoring God by not killing Saul or not taking Saul out. Then David, in his reign, in his prosperity, we know the story of Bathsheba. And he got in a place where he lost God's favor and brought all kinds of pain on his family. What I'm saying is, God's favor is good for us and it's there for us. And I fear losing it. But through these three stories and through these three examples, we can see that the thing that the thing that caused it to be lost was disobedience in every case. And that'll be true today for us. If we are disobedient to God, we can lose His favor. So not only did these people make a name, they became smarter than God and smarter than God's direction, and they didn't scatter about the earth and be fruitful. They said, we'll stay here together in Babel. And, God, He directs a fruitful path, but man designs destruction. Let's look at verse 5. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower, which the children of men builded. And the Lord said, behold, the people is one, and they have all one language, and this they begin to do. And now nothing will be restrained from them that they have imagined to do. Now that is true. When people align and people get pointed to the same purpose, it's hard to stop prosperity and what people are wanting to accomplish. I'll just say, even in a church, if we pick a positive out of this story, if we're all aligned and we're all on the same page, there's a lot we can do for God if we're all speaking the same language. Now, we have some terminology we use at my work. We talk about if we have something to accomplish, we get together and, we debate it out or we argue it out. And we don't have to leave the room in agreement, but we have to leave the room in alignment. In other words, get it said. We'll all get it considered. We're going to design a path, and nobody's to leave here working a different agenda. We're all aligned. So if there's something that is going to cause you to work a different agenda, get it out so we can get that on the table. But we'll take your alignment over agreement any day. These people here had alignment. Groups of people never fully agree, by the way. We may pretend we do, but we don't. But we can become aligned. Someone may say, well, I'm going to leave the church. I don't agree with Brother Ken. I just don't like what he said. I don't agree with that. I don't agree with his position on that. Okay, I would challenge you. Maybe you do or don't agree with everything Brother Ken or Brother Mike says standing behind the pulpit or any of us. But can you be aligned to the purpose? Can you be aligned to what the ministry is trying to accomplish? Can you be aligned to the heart that the pastor has and the heart that the church has? If you can accomplish that, then lose all that agreement stuff. But by the way, you could be wrong also. Because if you were so smart, God may have you running the church or leading the church. If I was so smart, He may have me leading the church. So God's not going to come tell me what's supposed to happen in this ministry so that I'm smarter than the pastor. That's not the order of things. That's not the flow of information. Why would God need to come through me to get things proper in the church? He's not going to do that. So I'm not saying our pastor can't be wrong, But I'm saying he's probably right more than we are because he's the one getting the direction. I don't like how he said it. That's okay. You can be aligned to his mission. So in verse 7 it says, let us go down and there confound their language that they may not understand one another's speech. So God knew that he knew how he could stop the people from building the tower. He had to break their communication. He broke their ability to communicate, so he broke their progress. Breaking communication in a marriage breaks progress. Breaking communication in a church breaks progress. Breaking communication in a family breaks progress. God broke their ability to communicate so he could see his purpose fulfilled from them and through them. Sometimes God has to break our progress in our lives to get us back on path. It says in verse 8, so the Lord scattered them abroad from thence, and upon the face of the earth they left off to build the city. So once they couldn't communicate anymore, the Tower of Babel, that's where the word Babel comes from, they had no choice but to spread out in their groups and go prosper and replenish the earth the way the Lord had said. God made them different so that they would spread out to accomplish his purpose. I encourage you to not get too critical of people who are different than you are. A lot of these differences have purpose in God's plan, that these people will join together on these common grounds. These people will join together on these common grounds. And it's all for a greater purpose. And these people over here shouldn't be judging those people over there, because God has designed this thing. Don't get too stuck on your perspective as the only one. Be careful to understand that God uses all types of people. He created all types of people. Why wouldn't he use all types of people? He created all types of people for his will. Why would he only use people like me? I have a lot of issues. I have limited use. He needs different types of people to do different things. In verse 9 it says, therefore is the name of it called Babel, because the Lord did confound their language of all the earth. And from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of the earth. So this story reminds me, just as the bread was broken into fragments to feed the 5,000, the unity of this people who were building a tower was also fragmented, so that they could be scattered, so that they could benefit all the future generations. That's what God needed. He didn't need a great city. He needed the earth populated. So it should be expected that God would use people in spite of their shortcomings, and sometimes he has to break us apart to achieve that purpose. So when Adam and Eve were expelled from the garden, they moved east of Eden. So if we look back at verse 2 earlier in the lesson, let's see here. Back when they were trying to find their place to build their tower, it says in verse 2, and it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar and dwelt there. And that's where they chose to build their tower. When Adam and Eve were expelled from the garden, they moved east of Eden. When Cain left the presence of the Lord, he went east to Nod. In chapter 13, Lot, later in the book here, will settle east of Sodom. Here in Genesis 11, the people head east and end up in the plain of Shinar, which is, by the way, the modern day Iraq. And that's where they built the Tower of Babel. Nowhere in their directions from God did he tell them to go east. What direction are we choosing in life? Is it the direction that God has advised? What direction are you turning your foot toward in 2022, 2023? It starts the momentum. It starts the momentum for where our lives are headed. The direction we point ourselves starts that momentum. I've heard Brother Ken teach several times or preach several times that a day's journey away from Christ can cost you 3 days' journey back. I think that's in reference to when he was 12 years old teaching in the temple and his parents left him. So if you can hear my voice tonight, we're all very fortunate. You know, we're here. We have life. We've all just made it through a once-in-a-many-generations pandemic. We're here. I mean, not unscathed. And I don't make light of any situation that happened through there, because a lot of people had, including us, had some great loss and in a lot of different ways. But, and I've just, for the last couple of weeks, our family's gone through two funerals. And, you know, when you think about the fact that life has ends, things, you can value the fact that if there's ever a moment when you can grab the realization that, well, okay, bad things happen, things are going to be tough, things are tough, but right now I'm right here. I have life, I have opportunity, not just for myself, but also to be useful and to benefit other people. And I also have the ability to decide, am I going to step this way? Am I going to step this way? I get to decide what direction I'm going to take. And if we can listen to God and go in His direction, then until it's our time, which could be 100 years from now, it could be, who knows, we can fulfill God's purpose and live a prosperous life. And yeah, there's going to be, you know, hard times, but it matters the direction that we choose and how we can benefit the lives of ourselves and the lives of our family and the lives of others. Here we stand, you know, with the gift of survival, the gift of choice, the opportunity to be obedient or not be obedient, and we get to decide whether to accept God's way and God's plan or God's purpose. And I ask, I just challenge us with a question. Why would we ever pick to be in conflict with God? Who's going to win that power struggle? I mean, we are selfish creatures, some of us more than others. We do have our own desires. But if we can just stop for a minute and think, why would I choose to do something in conflict with God? You know, you raise children and your children sometimes get in conflict with you. And, you know, for most of their lives, you're bigger, or at least early in their lives, we're bigger and stronger. And eventually, I remember one of my children, I won't say her name, I remember hated her getting her teeth brushed. I mean, hated it for whatever reason. This is baby, okay? You know, when teeth are barely there. And I remember I had a common saying, well, you're going to brush your teeth. Do you want it the easy way or the hard way? The hard way was a headlock, and it was, you know, is that okay? Is that abuse? Y'all ain't going to call a defect. It's too late. I think the statute of limitations has already run out. I mean, we could not brush their teeth. Then you could call defects for that, right? But I think a lot of times God looks at us and says, this is good for you. This is right for you. This is healthy for you. You're going to do it eventually. Do you want it the easy way or the hard way? And the easiest way is through initial obedience, not eventual obedience, initial obedience. So why is it so hard for us to submit to God and a plan and a path that will bring good things to our life? If we can just really sit back and give pieces of ourselves up, God can work through us. Lord, may we listen and follow your direction and your purpose in life. Thank you all.